Thank you, Caroline, for the very nice introduction. So today is really my great honor to be here today to share with you this paper. I do like to emphasize this paper is sponsored by a very brand new institute, the Joint Institute for Social Development at NYU Shanghai, and it's a research collaboration institute between Silver School of Social Work at NYU and the School of Social Development at East China Normal University in Shanghai. We envision this institute to be multi and interdisciplinary research institute. So we really, and this is our first year in operation, and what we are really looking forward to is to attract as many scholars, wonderful as you, to work with us on different issues such as aging, such as immigration and immigrants, and such as children, youth, and families. So I truly looking forward to the opportunity to working with many of you. And so let me get back. Sorry for this little bit advertisement, because I'm very excited about this new research institute. I'm the co-director. And so today what I would like to share with you is the trajectory of physical health, cognitive status, and psychological well-being among Chinese elderly. I very absolutely echo Dr. Yamada's conceptions about when we look at the elderly or the aging life, this should be looking at the multi-dimensions, and that's really where we are coming from. We're not just looking at the one outcome well-being, but we're looking at the multiple well-being dimension in this case. As my disclosures. You know much more than I do, actually, in terms of context. This is an aging phenomena. It's around the world. But what really helped me is in China particularly, currently in 2000, they already have 90 million people aged 65 or older. And then in 2050, they project is going to have 300 million people alone aging 65 and older. The way I understand this number is the total United States population is 300 million. But what this means is in China, only the people aged 65 and older already represent the total population in the United States. That's huge. That's magnified in terms of the issues we have to pay attention to. And some cities like Shanghai, they already have, their total population already have about one-third of their population is aged 65 and older. And then they are the oldest old population, which we're talking about age 80s and older, is already have a 12 million in 2000 in China. And they are projected to have about 40 million by 2030. So the implication for public health programs and for a whole variety of community services is really important in terms for us to make sure we can maintain a very healthy aging populations, not just in China, but around the world as well. So our where we are coming from is really we would like to take a multi-dimensional well-being into account when we're looking at the aging well-being in this case. And then we also want to look using a life course perspective to look at these issues. I want to give you a little bit context in a way as the data sets we are using already being used by many scholars. They're mainly using a cross-sectional perspective to really investigate, examine what are the factors are important to the elderly well-being. And what they found in general, and in particular using these data sets, is the education, the economic independence, being married, echoed again Dr. Yamato's results, regularly consuming vegetables, access to healthcare services, has really positively increased in their longevity. Their physical health, their cognitive impairments also carry a lot of weight in terms of how long they are going to live. Their childhood socioeconomic conditions also matter greatly in terms of how much cognitive functions in the when they have in their elderly life and their longevity. And then to be a much macro factor, so the community economic resources makes a lot of difference as well in terms of how to dictate an elderly person's physical, mental, overall health by living in different communities with different resources. So our research question is really we're using the life course perspective to look at these issues. We not only want to understand the factors right on the contemporary issues in contemporary perspective in terms how they contribute to their current well-being, but we also want to really look at in their childhoods what are the factors, how not well their childhood may make a difference in terms in their early life. Like it really carry a lot of long-term implications in terms how much longer farther away we should really start into taking care of each individual to make sure a healthy aging life. And we also would like to examine the factors that may promote or inhibit healthy well-being over time as one ages. We focus on multiple dimensions, and we also focus on not cross-sectional, but really longitudinal, using the growth curve analysis, which you're looking at if one factor changing, for example, if they exercise much more frequently during the time period we exempt, does that also translate they are going to have much healthier life during that same period of time in this case? So that's where our contribution is in terms to contribute to the field of knowledge. So we're using Chinese Longitudinal Health Longevity Survey. They're focusing on the oldest old age, 80 years and older, from 22 provinces in China. They did face-to-face interviews. They already starting conduct surveys starting in 1998. The most recent one is 2008. For our analysis, we're really looking at the 1998 to 2005 because, you know, they are focusing on the oldest older populations. Over time, there's a huge attrition really due to the elderly starting to dying over time very quickly. So by 2008, they really only have about 300 left in their original cohorts. So to allow us to have a much more decent sample size, we have to start 2005. That allow us to have at least 1,000 elderly populations we can look at over time, starting from 1998 to 2005. We are looking at multiple dimensions, psychological well-being, such as how happy you are. Are you always looking at the bright side of things? There's a total of 7 items. We also look at how many, if they have any chronic disease, such as a heart disease, a stroke, those kind of chronic disease. We also looking at, do they have any activity of daily living disabilities in this case, like bathing or dressing. We also look at their cognitive functions using the mini mental examination survey, which is a questionnaire already being widely used not only in the United States but also in China in international context. We're looking at really a very rich set of individual and family characteristics as control variables. And like I mentioned, we're using growth curve analysis to estimate the changes in independent variables to see how that translates into the changes in their health well-being in this case. So to give you an overview about what the elderly people look like in our data, there's about two-thirds of the elderly, they were born in 1911 or later. About two-thirds of them grew up without any education. And that's really the time point the context China went through, starting from 1911 all the way. That's the historical context they grew up, because a lot of war going on, the cultural revolutions. And there's more than half were in agricultural, fishery, occupation people they get to age 60. And then like looking at the start in between 1998 and 2005, what we observe from this sample of elderly is there's more elderly living in urban areas and also living with fewer family members between 1998 and 2005. There's also more elderly, which might translate, were taken care of by friends or neighbors, and fewer were being taken care of by their family members over time. Their health well-being seems to have declined a little bit, not totally like everything declining, but they have a slight decrease in their psychological well-being. They have a higher likelihood of having a chronic disease and having more of it. They also have increased chance of having at least one ADL disability. More of the elderly also become cognitively impaired over time between 1998 and 2005. So I'm just going to show you very quickly our growth curve analysis results. So what we found in terms of, I want to highlight the factors promote health well-being and the factors not like might inhibit the health well-being. The ones that really help, again, really echo Dr. Yamada's results is if they are very physical active and they engage in leisure activities, that really helps. if they are cared by social workers, actually, they have a much less ADL disability. They consume much more vegetables that really help their psychological and cognitive function. If they also have a higher childhood socioeconomic status, that's really translate into they have much healthy life in during their aging process as well. And the living in urban area also helps in terms of their psychological well-being. The factors that's not really helping, which put it another the opposite side, is if they're receiving care from friends and neighbors versus from family members, and if they're consuming vegetables, they actually have much more chronic disease. If they also have held professional manager positions, they are also much more likely to have a chronic disease. If they're living in urban area, they're also much more likely to have chronic disease. The way we understand is about how urban life is. We all know how urban life is in terms of doesn't provide you much opportunity to exercise. And we do believe that's maybe one major reason to have much more chronic disease compared to the elderly living in rural area who has much room to exercise, or they actually need to work more than less than people living in urban area. And light exercise walking really helps in terms of chronic disease and many other dimensions of health well-being. The way we understand consuming vegetables is, I think this is very special, particularly just among this particular group of elderly, given their child livelihoods and growing up experience. Consuming vegetables maybe for this cohort of elderly represents that's how the only food they were able to access when they grow up. So they consuming too much vegetables, yet at the same time may represent they actually did not have access since their childhood to calcium and protein. And that may increase their likelihood of being malnutrition. So consuming more vegetables for this particular cohort of elder may represent a very particular life context they went through. And so using these all results, what we like to use in results to implications to health policy is given they are less likely to be being taken care of by family members over time. And we also see if they are being taken care of by social workers, they actually have much less likelihood to develop a more ADL disability. That really says a lot how as a community or as a government perspective, we should provide much more community resources like this to provide them the chances to help them with the ADL disability. And also the involving physical activity and leisure activity also says a lot about, and then combined with living much fewer family members, really says a lot. Community resources can also really come into play to provide those environmental resources to help them to involve in physical and leisure activities in this case. And our consuming vegetables really help us to thinking about perhaps for this particular group of elderly, we need to provide much more meal nutrition screening in this case to make sure consuming vegetables not hurting their imbalanced nutrition in this case. So then the last implication we really want to emphasize in terms of important childhood socioeconomic status, how does that translate into even when you are old, it still makes a difference. And so perhaps in all our programs and in all our prevention efforts, we really should start from the beginning, since the children's early time, and to make sure that can really translate, has such a long-term implications to even when you are older in your life. Thank you very much.